How about you try it this time? Give it a go.
I don't know. Okay.
What's up, everybody?
How did I do?
You did pretty good.
Thank yeah. you. Welcome back to the Queer Collective podcast. I'm Emily.
And I'm Carbon.
That felt weird. I don't think it's my gig. I don't want to steal your job.
Fair enough.
Put you out of work.
It's kind of the only value I provide.
So. Yeah, that's it. The intro.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might as well host this alone if you want me to do the intro. Awkward.
Okay.
Anyway, today we are talking about Bill C4.
I thought you were going to say Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yep, that's what we're talking about, baby.
I'm here for it. Okay, what's C4? It's like an explosive.
So, Bill C4 is an act to amend the criminal code to implement a ban on conversion therapy.
It's about time. Did it pass?
Well, that's what I'm going to take you through today. What we're going to talk about is basically what happened with the bill politically, what conversion therapy really is, why the bill matters, and then we're going to be talking about the history of conversion therapy in Canada and kind of the role that religion played in making this.
Okay, I'm here for it. Let's do it.
It's going to get spicy, but I have my notes in front of me because there's a lot of information here that I researched that I'm going to share with you today. So don't mind me and my notebook.
Okay, I won't mind you.
Thank you. So on Wednesday, MPs in Canada's House of Commons unanimously voted in favor on a motion to ban conversion therapy. Yeehaw.
Even the conservatives?
Yes. That's what's actually very exciting about this and notable about this, because the majority of their caucus has voted against it previously, like even just before a recent election. So that's kind of part of the story that I would like to explain
to
you.
That's a sketchy, sketchy sudden change.
Don't be suspicious. It's interesting. We're going to talk about it. Let me give you these facts.
Give me the facts.
So first I want to chat about like what this new bill will make illegal.
Okay.
Number one, causing another person to undergo conversion therapy. Two, doing anything for the purpose of removing a child from Canada with the intention that the child will undergo conversion therapy outside of Canada.
Whoa.
Promoting or advertising conversion therapy. And finally, receiving a financial or other material benefit from the provision of conversion therapy.
Interesting.
So pretty extensive, covers a lot of bases.
That second one.
Yeah, removing your child from Canada.
People do that?
I guess so.
They take their children outside of Canada just for this thing that doesn't work at all?
Well, I think as of right now, since it's not illegal, they wouldn't, but I feel like that's just kind of saving those loopholes.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? It's like just making sure there's no loopholes in this.
People would be like, oh, okay, I can't do it here. Let me go somewhere else.
Maybe if you're in a very homophobic family, you're, I don't know, a very religious family, say you were to get pregnant in the south of America. Some people will like take their daughters out of state and like put them somewhere. You know what I mean? It's like these things happen if your family has money.
Crazy.
You know? So let's talk about kind of what happened in the House of Commons.
Okay.
The Liberal government has tried to pass variations of this bill in the past. The last time that this happened was basically right before the Canadian snap election, where 62 out of 119 of O'Toole's conservative MPs voted against the legislation.
Wow.
Which is significant.
That's pretty significant. That's half-ish.
I don't know if that's more than half or less. Is that bad?
Ooh. 62 out of 119. Well, 120 is double of 60. So, yeah, that's about slightly more than half. Like,
nice.
Three more than half.
I didn't know you were a mathematician.
It's simple math, but yeah, okay.
Don't be modest. So, that initial bill months ago. I cannot. Okay. Calm. That initial bill managed to pass through the House without conservative support. At the time, the reasons that conservatives didn't want to vote for it was mainly socially conservative MPs, of course. They voted against the bill and complained at the time that the wording of the bill was overly broad and could criminalize conversations about sexuality between parents and children or between children and religious leaders.
Interesting.
Which seems like a
reach. A little bit sketchy.
I feel like the only place I could potentially see that in this language would be promoting or advertising conversion therapy. But I think you'd have to consider promoting and advertising as putting like monetary dollars behind that, or like, right. You know what I mean? Not just like in your inner circle. This was particularly notable, socially conservatives voting against it, because as we've spoken about in our Canadian political election coverage, episode we did, Erin O'Toole has trying to be claiming that he is an LGBTQ ally.
I'm a pro-choice ally to the LGBTQ community.
Right. This is what I've noticed. And I think this is why a lot more people, more than just the, you could say, traditional conservative crowd, have been liking Erin O'Toole a little bit more. Or maybe liking is strong, maybe tolerating Erin O'Toole a little bit more, depending on where you fall on the left or right. He's been saying things that are more centrist leaning rather than right leaning.
Yeah. And you want to know why that is strategically?
To get more people to vote for them?
It's particularly because you need Ontario to win, and Ontario is more so moderate.
Yeah.
Than they are more like socially conservative.
Right, right.
And where they've seen success in the past, conservative parties, was with Stephen Harper, our former prime minister, because he was able to bring the party together, both social conservatives and just like fiscal conservatives, and make everyone kind of feel at ease about it, because he would like notoriously say like he's not going to bring up the issue of abortion. He didn't want to even talk about those issues, but he would somehow pander to the social conservatives still.
Yeah, it's a fine line to walk to try to
please everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this seems like a super strategic move. Yeah.
But that vote, back to the topic, prompted a lot of backlash for him because of him claiming that he's going to be so progressive. So, you at home and you beside me.
Hello.
Maybe wondering, so, Emily, what changed?
Yeah, Emily, what changed?
Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah. I came up with that on my own.
So this time around, we actually saw very strong support from the Conservatives, with Conservative MP Rob Moore presenting a motion to fast track the Liberal bill through the House, which was unanimously adopted across all parties.
Progress.
And honestly, one thing I really, really love to see is when all political parties work together for the common good.
Totally. Working together, what does that entail? It always entails some sort of compromise, even if it's agreeing to disagree, but like respectfully.
Yeah.
You know, like, and we said it before, especially in our election episode, that we don't think that this country should be solely conservative or solely progressive /
liberal,
because it should always be people working together.
Yeah, it's good to have representation from all people. And that's how I think positive governments run.
Yeah.
But this, of course, is a human rights issue, and that's what it should be looked at.
Totally.
And I think people came together and did see it as that, which is like nice to see.
Yeah, that is nice.
But it is important to note that it has not passed through the Senate yet, so we kind of have to wait on that.
So last time it didn't pass through the Senate. Do you think that this time it will? What's going on there?
I'm hoping, especially because we're seeing agreement across all parties.
Unanimous votes.
It looks promising for sure. But yeah, I'm like definitely very excited to see this. One notable thing that I saw was that provinces actually have adopted bans on conversion therapy. Like, it's already banned in Ontario and across some other provinces as well. But it's always important, though, even just as like a country, to show that this is not our values. This isn't what we stand for. Mm-hmm. And it is stronger to have it implemented in the criminal code, in like the Bill of Human Rights, you know what I mean? Like, these things, they stand up in court and they provide queer people from all marginalized communities with a lot more protection and rights. Now we're going to kind of chat about like what conversion therapy is and why this bill matters so
much.
So conversion therapy, for those of you who don't know, although I feel like it's a bit self-explanatory, but it's the practice of trying to cure, quote unquote, LGBTQ people of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
Which is pretty messed up, because, I mean, this whole notion of there's only one right way to exist, and we need to cure you because you're defective and you're not like a fully functioning human. Wow, that's so degrading. Just even saying it out loud, I'm like, I feel less than.
Yeah,
it's really upsetting. I feel like not a human being, you know, when you like speak about it.
When I get into the history of it, you'll see kind of some stories of how people were brainwashed and how queer people themselves almost push this movement forward in some ways.
Totally.
You know?
I've seen lots of videos, but we can get into that later.
Yeah, definitely. So clearly, conversion therapy does not work, as I will quote PhD scholar Lady Gaga. Baby, we were born this way.
Smart words.
Yes. She's a genius. And in addition to Gaga's wise words, the Canadian Psychological Association has also condemned the practice of conversion therapy. And they've listed some reasons why that is. And I kind of want to say those right now, because I think those demonstrate really clearly why this bill matters so much.
Okay.
So first things first, conversion therapy can result in negative outcomes such as distress, anxiety, depression, negative self-image, a feeling of personal failure, difficulty sustaining relationships, and sexual dysfunction. And there's absolutely no evidence that the negative effects of conversion therapy counterbalance any distress caused by the social stigma and prejudice that queer folks experience. Mm-hmm. So it's not worth it, essentially, is what they're saying. Yeah, obviously not to us, but just for other folks.
To other people.
Like, these parents sometimes will say, like, I don't want you to go through the burden of living as someone who's marginalized. That's often what parents say, is like, I just want the best for you.
I understand that. And here's my qualms with that. By the way, I never actually know the meaning of the word qualms, but I use it like this. Here's my trouble. Here's my qualms.
Yeah.
So when parents say, I find that very hypocritical.
Mm-hmm.
When parents say that, I don't want you to go through this struggle of being gay, of being queer, of being non-binary, etc. And the reason that I find that hypocritical is because you, as a queer person, have already been through a lot just to even discover that you are queer.
Mm-hmm.
And now on top of that, you will face like harder conditions as a queer person, especially, obviously it's getting better throughout times, but the farther back in time that we go, the harder it gets, right? So to say I want to cure you so that you don't have to face that is completely invalidating the experience that they went through to even recognize it. And to me, a parent or a family member should be the ones to protect, not the ones to further make you feel like you're an alien, like you're an outsider, like you're not worth anything.
Yeah.
So parents, you know, if there's literally anybody that is a parent that is listening to this or watching it, that is how it makes the kids feel. That is how your kids will feel if you have a kid that comes out to you and that's the kind of thing that you say to them. I want to cure you. I want to help you not be queer or not be gay or whatever. It just further alienates that person. It doesn't help them at all.
Not to mention also working up the courage to come out to a family member.
That's huge.
Is a lot.
That's like, a lot.
We understand ourselves the barriers that we're going to face. But again, we were born this way. I don't have another option. I personally would not want another option. I know some people would want that option, and I get that, but you don't.
And that's a fair statement. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I think that that's also a key thing to keep in mind, is that I know that for myself, I can't speak for anybody else, but I know that for myself, when I first realized that I'm queer, I did want another option. I did wish that it wasn't true. I wished that I could just be normal, that I could just be straight and like not have to deal with all of this extra baggage on top of already, you know, having a human life and going through struggles that every human faces.
Yeah.
On top of that, facing a brand new struggle that none of my family members had faced. Like, I wish that at the time, I wish that it had been different. Now, knowing what I know, I wouldn't change myself at all.
No.
And I'm very happy with who I am. But it's tough as a kid to go through that, especially if you don't have a supportive family, which I know that a lot of people don't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I really liked that you said is that it's the parents' job to protect. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is, like, yes, it's a scary world out there for sure. But not being supportive of me, wanting to change me, that is actually more detrimental to me than anything else. Because someone in my family is somebody who I love, somebody who I respect, somebody who I want their support more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And not having that hurts more than a random stranger yelling slurs at me.
Of course, you know? Because you go through it is a struggle to even realize that you're queer. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as that you realize that you're queer, you realize, well, this is the current situation in society. This is the kind of stuff that I'm going to face.
Yeah.
Like, you're very aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
And then to come out to family members, like, you're very aware of that also being a tough conversation. So if you really want to help your children, then it really is. It comes down to love and support.
Yeah. So I guess moving on. I liked that side combo, though. The last reason that this bill is really important is because conversion therapy is still being offered widely across Canada.
Wow.
And mostly by religious groups.
Right.
So this is still something that is definitely available to homophobic religious parents to put their kids through.
Yeah. And when we say homophobic religious parents, like, I am very aware, I think we're both very aware, that there are plenty of religious people that aren't homophobic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, there are plenty of religious and non-religious people that are.
Yeah.
And I think that when it comes to religion, sometimes it can be seen as like a loophole around certain things that you probably shouldn't be doing, such as conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when people are homophobic, they tend to hold on to something to really solidify why their opinion is correct.
Yeah.
And one of those things that certain people tend to cling on to is religion. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, my religion says this, therefore you can't be this way.
Yeah, and the fact that we have like religious freedoms, it is important, but a lot of people do use that as a means to discriminate.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. As you can use not just religion, other things as well.
Yeah.
As a means to discriminate, but it is important to acknowledge that religion is one of them.
There are very many inclusive churches, some that are queer-led.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely not all religious people.
Yeah.
Now that we kind of have that down of why this bill is so important, I want to talk about the history of conversion therapy in Canada and how it really came to be. Until 1967, I think it's important to note that homosexuality was criminalized under Canada's criminal code. So now the bill that is set to protect us once
was against us.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then until 1973, the American Psychiatric Association classified homosexuality as a mental illness.
Yeah, that's a real rough thing to be hit with.
That's like, dark.
Hey, I'm queer. You're mentally ill.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's really a strong part of this, though, because conversion therapy, in the root in it, there was a lot of mental health professionals that were part of this. Like,
yeah,
religious organizations would partner with mental health practitioners to treat you. Because they saw it as a mental illness.
You know what I really wonder? Is that, okay, being queer, or just queerness in general, wasn't always seen as a mental illness. That's kind of like, in terms of the history of the world, it's pretty new. Like, obviously, it's been around for a long time relative to us, but like, in general, it wasn't always like that. Like, I know that just briefly off the top of my head, there's like the history of a lot of indigenous tribes was like very queer inclusive, and other places in the world as well. Like,
ancient Greece statues are gay AF. They are. Honestly, I would love to do a whole episode on how the world came to be homophobic, because it didn't used to be. Like, homosexual sex actually was the norm for a long period of time.
In ancient Rome, for example, like, there used to be
sexy orgies.
Sexy orgies. And it would be like everybody with everybody. It wasn't like, okay, let's assign every dude with a girl. Like, no, it was just like everybody feeling themselves and others.
So back to it, after the sort of 1973 piece about homosexuality being a mental illness, Exodus International, a company which was largely considered to be the religious face of conversion therapy, was formed in 1976, and they administered to gays and lesbians who wanted to limit their homosexual desires conversion therapy. So this movement then grew with the help of smaller church ministries who would then go out and continue their work. And this happened in both the US and Canada. And these ministries were then paired up with mental health practitioners, like I was saying earlier. Wow. So that really ties into the piece about it being categorized as a mental illness.
It's a whole operation.
Oh, yeah. And then in 1980, the AIDS crisis then continued to fuel this anti-gay rhetoric.
That was
and
it just big grew. Piece of ammo for them.
Oh, yeah. Moving on to 1992, the conversion therapy movement became more secular, meaning it moved away from religion. And when the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality teamed up with Exodus International, that first company I mentioned, mm-hmm. to promote their conversion therapy rebrand, basically, which they promoted as reparative therapy. We love a rebrand. Except for CIBC, I do not like your rebrand, and I'm putting that here as my confessional. I've stated it to the public. I hate the rebrand.
Oh my God.
Now back to the episode.
They'll never sponsor us now.
So what reparative therapy was and how it was a slight departure, I suppose, from conversion therapy is it is a form of confessional talk therapy with roots in psychoanalysis and behaviorism.
Did they have any sort of like modalities, like electric shock?
Yeah, there was definitely some really effed up modalities used throughout all of this. I don't have all the specifics of what was used, and I don't want to, I guess, sensationalize it without having like the proper knowledge.
Fair enough.
Because I feel like my strongest reference to this would be American Horror Story.
Jeez.
Know that's a little bit
dramatized. Yeah, no kidding.
So I'm not gonna go there. In 1998, conservative Christian groups launched a print and TV ad campaign in the US lending a human face to conversion treatments by featuring testimonials from ex-gay participants who claimed to be cured. So I kind of then recently watched a documentary. I can't remember if we watched it together or not, but it was about people who had basically left this movement that they once led.
I saw that.
We watched it together. I think. It was these people basically who were in these advertisements, and they then went on to these documentaries because they realized how messed up it was, and they were messed up by
it. Right. Yes. There was, I can't remember anybody's names, but there's this one guy who was gay for the longest time, or I mean, is gay.
Yeah,
like it's not like he was never not gay, but he claimed to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lesbian.
And he married the lesbian, right?
Yes. And they had kids together. Yes. And they were so convinced mm-hmm. that they weren't gay. And then he realized he is. And she continued on with being like, no, this mm-hmm. is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they obviously split up, and that didn't go well at all.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting how they made a documentary about all of these people that mm-hmm. were not just quote unquote healed from their gayness, their queerness,
mm-hmm.
but they were recruiting other people to get that treatment. And, and they did it for years and years and years. And that was like their whole identity for so many years. And then realizing that you're wrong and that it's messed up.
Yeah.
How like, I just wonder how that would mess up just your psyche. Yeah. I would feel so guilty.
Well, that's basically what the documentary was. It was like their testimonial, them almost like repenting, I guess, because they felt so bad about it. You know, they realized what they had gone through and the fact that they were putting other people through it. And
insane.
I remember how bad that guy felt.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the basis of it was. Like, he was exposing the whole movement because he felt so bad.
Yeah.
After this kind of campaign era, starting in the 2000s, things started to turn around. The gay liberation movement definitely picked up.
Right. Some of those organizations start to get shut down as well.
Yeah. And there was like counter movements that grew much stronger for sure. And things slowly became banned. But it shows you how slow Canada truly has been to banning this. It should have been something that happened a far long time ago.
I mean, how many people have PTSD from all of that craziness that they went through, whether they were just going through the conversion therapy, and saying just is obviously a huge understatement, but that compared to being a recruiter for conversion therapy, mm-hmm. like how messed up do you come out of that?
And now I have a bit of a question for you, because I know that you grew up religious and I did not at all, but I'm wondering kind of like the internalization of that, because you can see that these people growing up in the church, that's what you're surrounded by. That's your community. You have such a strong belief in God mm-hmm. and hell and heaven and mm-hmm. the fact that that's your goal and your motivation behind doing this.
It's tough, to be honest, because you, especially like going to Catholic school, and Catholic school, you always go to church. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like people didn't know better. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when I got to high school, my perception of religion started changing. A couple of big things that helped. I remember there was this other girl. Her name was also Laura, except she was like Laura 2.0. I was so like envious of her at the time. I was like, frick, like if I could only be Laura 2.0.
She was like superior Laura.
Superior Laura. It's like we were both named Laura. Check this out. We're both named Laura. We're both from Columbia. Oh, we're both the same age and went to the same school, right? Except she played rugby mm-hmm. and she had tattoos and she would get all the boyfriends. And
oh, she was straight.
Well, no, but she would get all the boyfriends and she was just like, everybody loved her. She was Laura 2.0. And I was just like the dork that was like, oh my God, I forgot to pack my tuna sandwich today. And then, so she would get all the boys. She came out publicly, like didn't make an announcement in school, but she came out as lesbian. Mm-hmm. And then she got more boys. And
what?
I was like,
what do you mean?
What the hell? Well, huh? I don't know. I think she was just like such like a hot figure that people wanted to get with. And as soon as the boys found out she's not available, I think that made them want her more.
Ugh, I hate that. Yeah.
So then she went from getting all the boys mm-hmm. to getting all the boys and all the girls.
Damn.
I know. What a tough time it was to be the inferior Laura in high school.
Oh, no.
But honestly, her coming out and people seeing her as even cooler and even more desirable, as much as I felt like more of a dork, at the same time, I was like, huh, different things are possible. Mm. And all of this was done in a Catholic high school. So my mind started shifting around what religion really means. I started to realize that religion isn't just one thing. There are very inclusive churches and there are very like queer ally religious people. Mm-hmm. Like that does exist. So I think that it comes down to like, it's not religion necessarily that's the issue. It's the way that you interpret religion. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. But thank you all for listening. I hope that you took something away from this episode, got to celebrate with us.
It's a good day, and I think hopefully it'll be momentum for even more change, mm-hmm. like the blood ban where gay men can't donate blood. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So a few more steps forward. So if you like this video, please give it a like and subscribe, because we put out new videos every single week and you do not want to miss them. So hit that notification bell as well if you want to be alerted. It would also really help if you left a comment down below, because A, it helps with the YouTube algorithm, and B, we really want to know what you're thinking regarding conversion therapy. So with all that being said, you guys, we will see you in the next pod.
Peace. Bye.